Welcome to Season 3 of One Day You'll Thank Me,
a podcast for smart parents.
I'm Dr. Tara Egan.
And I'm not a Dr. Anna.
I'm a mom, a therapist, and an author.
And I'm a daughter and a kick-ass high school student.
Each week, we'll discuss a different parenting topic.
And we'll interview some fantastic guest experts.
We'll leave you with practical tips and information.
Plus, you'll get the perspective of a teen.
Stay tuned, everyone.
Boom.
All right. Welcome back, everybody.
Hi.
Anna has a surprise for us today.
Yeah, today we have one of my teachers on today.
I know.
Ooh, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, you came to me like maybe a month ago and you were like, I have an idea for a guest.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yep. I'm interested to see how this episode goes. So. Yeah.
And you're not super forthcoming with your podcasting abilities at school.
No.
So it was like a big secret reveal that you told your teacher that you even do this.
Yeah, because in that class, we actually did podcasting. So it made me feel more comfortable to
share.
Open up about it. Yeah.
Yeah. When you told me about the assignment, I'm like, you are going to tell your teacher that you do a podcast.
Like, it took you a few times. You're like, have you told your teacher yet? Have you told your teacher yet?
Yeah. I wasn't going to make you, but yeah. I felt like it was a wasted opportunity to share something about yourself.
And I did. So
yeah.
It worked out.
Yeah. Anyway, let's introduce today's guest. So today's guest expert is Mr. Arma Shianko, and he is a business and technology teacher in a South Carolina public school district. In addition to being a teacher, he manages and advises Future Business Leaders of America, and he incorporates leadership activities into the business and technology curriculum. He's also the executive director of Give and Go, which is a nonprofit workforce development organization that develops high school students and college youth while connecting them to real industry opportunities and experiences. He has a bachelor's degree in business administration, and he's in the process of obtaining his master's of science degree in talent and organization development. He's been very involved in the community as a speaker, youth advocate, and coach. He's here to talk about how his life experiences have influenced his teaching style and resulted in the publication of his first book called Leadership is a Choice. So welcome, Mr. Shianko. And I'm going to call you Mr. Shianko because you're my kid's teacher and teachers don't really have first names.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for being here, Mr. Shianko. I'm in your marketing class this semester and I'm very much enjoying your teaching style.
Thank you so much, Anna.
I'm going to start off today by asking you to tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming a teacher. And I know from our conversation before the interview that you really didn't become a teacher in the most traditional way. So I want to hear more about that.
Yeah, well, thank you, first and foremost, because this is one of the coolest experiences that I never expected, right? never in my wildest dreams. One, it's funny, we're talking about me being a teacher. I never even dreamt about being a teacher ever growing up. And it was one of those things where I never saw myself being a teacher. It's just interesting how life plays itself out when you just align yourself with the things that feel like are right. And I'm a walking example of that because I come from West Africa, right? And that's heavily influenced even me being a teacher because education is king to everyone's household. That's all you hear growing up, especially if you come across many Africans here in America. We're told from the start that education is everything. It's your opportunity to doing something with your life. So it's almost ingrained. And where we're from, it's a privilege. Not everybody can afford it. So not everybody gets to be educated, right? In the format that we're used to and accustomed to here in terms of organized and structured education. So I know that's a lot already, but I just really want to start there because that really heavily influences. And I had to learn English right around, I would say, five, turning six. That's when I began learning English. So before English, I was speaking at least three different dialects from two different countries.
That's amazing.
Right?
Do you still speak those languages now?
They're in my head and I can speak them to myself, but they never come out.
Well, it's like when you have a different language, like the sounds are different. Like my husband grew up speaking Greek until he was five or six.
Yeah.
And then sounds he can make are not sounds I can make.
Yeah, yeah. So those are also things that people really don't consider, especially when we talk about immigrants from anywhere. And we don't consider the fact that in their homelands and where they're coming from, they're not only highly educated, they were also filling roles that were highly important, right? But they have to start all over again.
How do you feel about students? I mean, you work in a public high school.
Yes.
And not all of your students are appreciative of the opportunity to get a free public education here. Like, how does that feel for you?
You know, I don't really fault the students at this stage because I started out feeling exactly what you're saying. It used to frustrate me, even though I signed up to really just create what I believe would be an environment and an atmosphere that would be more conducive to them wanting to learn. Because young people do want to learn. We just suck the joy out of learning for them.
I've heard that before.
You don't find all your subjects joyous?
I mean, English, man, it's so interesting. You know, the poetry and the...
Yeah.
No, I can't even fake it.
But the reason why I say that is, it's not even so much about the learning, because what the system, and I'm not... Let me preface by saying that in no way am I speaking down on any teacher or anyone or anything or any person. I'm just speaking in terms of the system of education, because it has not progressed, whether it's K through 12, whether it's even pre-K, whether it's college, university. It's been the same systems that we've been operating for 300 plus years of education while everything else has changed. Technology, generations, right? You name it. The setup of the educational system and the reasoning for why it was started the way it was started, it meant well for that time. But then we evolved and have been evolving.
You know, I can't help but wonder with the onset of COVID and how we have to access information and we have to access our teachers differently right now. You know, I think this is going to make our work look very different because now... Correct. We have this whole other resource, you know, like when email came and all of a sudden all these meetings you went to could become an email. Right. And now there's definitely things that happen in person that we now know don't have to happen in person.
Nope.
So I wonder if COVID will kind of progress some of the education system because it's kind of forced us to.
Well, the major challenge here is that we've known that the system needed to shift a little bit and it needed to evolve a little bit, but it hadn't. And we also know that there were creases and cracks, but now they've been overly exposed, especially because of COVID and the pandemic. Now, the things that were there that we knew were there that needed to be improved that we hadn't, we were just putting Band-Aids over. The pandemic came and really exposed all of it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Right? The kids who are struggling more.
Correct. Things along those lines. So you see exactly where I'm going with this. So now there was always a need for a, let's say, reformatting of schooling or shifting of how schooling as a whole is, even especially the classroom, right? But now is more so how do we really now look at even the virtual education component? Personally, my focus has been how do I figure out how to engage, especially the students who are not going to be in person that I still, some of them, I've never seen yet.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do? What works for you? Like based on your experience, what do you feel has been helpful?
Starting with a foundation of a culture of respect, knowing that in order for me to have you understand what this thing, respect I'm speaking of is, I have to demonstrate it to you every single day you're here. And by me demonstrating it to you, I'm also showing you what I'm expecting of you. Right, Anna?
Yeah, definitely.
So you feel like there's times when teachers approach a classroom setting, they're not approaching with that mutual respect.
No.
Oh, I definitely
see that. I've been in those classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
It's a respect me, but I treat you however I choose to treat you because it's my classroom. For me, it's our classroom because we're all here to learn together because I learn more from them than I can ever teach them. That's the honest truth. All I'm there to do is to facilitate.
Hmm. That's true. I mean, a lot of the work I do with parents, you know, the parent coaching work I do, and parents will say, oh, my kid is so bossy and they talk to everybody in such a mean way. Or when they're angry, they have these tantrums and they, you know, say hateful things. And so I have to ask them, like, okay, well, tell me what it looks like when you get angry. Like, what happens with your body? What happens with your words? You know, when you give your child a direction, is it done in a way that other people would perceive as bossy? Are they imitating you? Or are you role modeling something different? Sometimes I don't necessarily ask it in quite as direct of a way as I just presented it, but that needs to be part of the conversation of, like, what are you role modeling for your kids?
Because children and young people do what they see, not what we tell them to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we've never wrapped our minds around this yet. They do what they see. My son, who was 2 at the time, made me kneel and look him in the eye and said, "Daddy," after pointing his finger directly over my chest, it was literally right over my heart, and looks me in the eye and says, "I want to be just like you when I grow up." And in that moment, I'm scared. Like, I've never been a day in my life. My life flashes in front of me. And I say to myself, "Holy moly, he's watching everything I am doing."
Yeah.
And my only response, as quickly as I could muster it up, was, "Son, I hope that you become better than me."
That's a good response.
Yeah.
And that's what I live for now, because I know that in the back of my head, wherever I go, I must carry myself in a way that I feel like my son is watching and he's right there with me, even when he's not. Because whenever I slip up, I fear that he'll catch me slipping up. And he will now begin to demonstrate whatever that thing is that I slipped up on. And it's a heavy, heavy burden to carry. Don't get me wrong. But it's what I know I must do, because I know my son has been watching me since he was 2. He told me that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I obviously feel that same privilege. Yeah, I mean, it's a privilege. My kid.
It's a real privilege.
Yeah, gets to be influenced by me. But it is. It's a lot sometimes when you think about, oh, goodness, I just checked my phone during dinner. Or, like, my latest thing was me fussing at you guys because you're like, don't want to come at the table. You're like, let's all eat picnic style in the family room together. And I'm like, this is bad parenting. Like, and so, you know, put my foot down, like, no, we're eating together. We're sitting around the table. We're making eye contact. We're not rushing. Like, this is happening.
We're still human, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're still, we're always human still, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we always have those moments.
Yeah.
Because we're human. But at the end of the day, at least our children know who we are.
Yeah. I think about, like, someday maybe my grandchildren will hear this podcast.
Oh my gosh.
Really?
You know, like, can you imagine if you heard grandma's voice when she was 44 and was parenting me as a teenager? Like, what she might have said and how much better you would have known her.
That's a good point. I mean, we live in a day and age where, like, you're taking 20 pictures a day if you want. Like,
that's right.
Well, somebody recently, because I have some specialty areas that my business is catered to, and somebody said, "Well, you know, your podcast is really, like, has a lot of general parenting topics, and every week is a different topic, and you talk to all these people. Like, don't you think you should get a little bit more focused?" Well, and I said, "This podcast is like a big long love letter to my daughter."
There it is.
I'm not, these recordings or whatever are going to last a lot longer than the person who listened to them one time riding in their car. Right. And, like, this is such a great way for me to impart information to my daughter and have her be engaged and have her be part of the process. Like,
oh yeah, I've learned so much from this.
You are,
I'm sure.
So much.
You are a different person on how you think.
Different breed, Anna. You're definitely a different breed. I've learned that about you since last year. Before now, remember?
Yeah, I was in your home room. So I'm, and then I know your wife too. She's
there, you have
coach,
it. See?
So.
Wait.
There you have it.
Coach Tiffany's his wife.
Oh my goodness. I didn't know that. I didn't know Coach Tiffany is your wife.
Yeah.
I told you this.
I did not register.
Which is one of the reasons why I have to be on my P's and Q's.
Yeah, you do. I get to go to work. My husband doesn't know what I do all day.
That's funny.
That's awesome. Small world. Wow. Small Hi, Miss Tiffany. Indeed.
And then Miss Tiffany's sister lives up the street from us. Oops.
That's right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Auntie Lala.
Do I know her?
Yeah, I think we've passed her like when we've gone on walks and stuff.
Oh my goodness. Declan, we're practically related Declan's to Mr. Chianco.
We're practically family.
Been on the soccer team of her daughter.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Like we know this family basically.
Wow. Yeah. Goodness.
We've been here for a little minute, like
the, yeah. Well, how awesome.
Yeah.
Well, this is so cool. And Anna, when you approached me and suggested that we have Mr. Chianco on as a guest expert, you talked about how much you appreciated him incorporating life lessons into his class. And so I wanted to ask you, like, can you give an example of a life lesson that he shared during one of his classes?
Well, I mean, you talk a lot about like our futures and like finding our passions over like, you know, the whole basic find a job that makes money and whatever, you know, the normal thing. Yeah, like a robot, like my mom's doing right now. So I really like enjoy those topics because I think I take like a lot back from them because I've definitely had times where I'm like, okay, well, what if I have a good outside of work job? I mean, not job, but like life.
High quality of life.
Yeah, like I have a good house or I like go on vacations and I have good quality clothes, but then I have a sucky job. But then you've kind of made it like where we can kind of have both, I guess. You incorporate a lot of like really good information that I learned from. I'm wording this weird, but you get the gist of it.
I get it. I get it.
Anna can be a little bit intense.
What?
Mm. I know. Crazy. Mm. So she'll start to kind of spiral into like, well, what is my future going to be? And how do I know which way to go? And okay. What if I make the wrong choice?
That's true.
And I think she hears from you and she hears like, do something that makes you happy, that has a purpose. I think that's good for her to hear because she can get caught up in the nitty gritty sometimes.
Here's the funny thing. It's not just Anna. There's a whole army of young people out here who are very similar.
Really? Because in our class, there's like people who have like these businesses and like know exactly the work they want to do. And I'm just like, what?
No, but Anna, they're figuring it out.
Yeah, that's true.
They're out here figuring it out. They're just trying things that they're thinking about.
That's
and
true.
They're just the ones who are courageous enough, like you are even with this podcast. And they're just trying out the things that they're finding is of interest to them. And they're actually doing it versus thinking about, oh, is it good for me? Is it going to be good for me? What if? What happens? Why me? No me. And then you do nothing.
Well, a lot of people think if you start something and it's not going to make you rich or famous, then there's no point. So kids who will say, you know, I don't want to do just rec soccer. I either have to be on a travel team, getting a scholarship, going to go pro, or it's somehow a waste of my time. And I just think like, gosh, so much can be gained from these smaller experiences, from the times you weren't the best.
And that's really where you learn the most. Because the thing is, life is about failing fast and learning as quickly as possible. For me personally, it's never a loss. It's always lessons. It was never always that way for me, but I really just got to the point where I realized and I woke up and got smart about life and realized, you know what? After so often, if you're not learning from these things, then you're the idiot. You're choosing to be the idiot.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we got to call a spade a spade. So we have to get to that level of serious with ourselves and hold ourselves accountable first. And to me, that's what leadership is. That's where leadership stems from. Because it's a personal choice for every individual. I don't care who you are, how old you are. It's a personal choice to hold yourself accountable first, always. And be real with yourself. I'm not saying beat yourself up, but at least be honest enough to own up to where you messed up. I must change and improve this, or else I will be the chosen village idiot because I'm choosing to be that idiot.
Mm-hmm. That complacency that comes from being oblivious or out of touch or uninformed. Now, one of the things Anna talked about was you sharing some experiences where you've like learned a lesson a hard way. Can you think of an example that you can share with us of something you learned the hard way? And what was the hard way? Like, what was the version that straightened out?
So do you want from young life, college
Anything.
Life? Do you want
something you feel so comfortable many. Putting on a podcast?
Ooh. All right. So let's put it this way. College. In college, I transferred from a community college that I did very well at. I really excelled there, and it wasn't because of anything of my choosing. But let's just say things went so well at my time during the community college. I was fortunate to transfer to a predominantly white institution that was very expensive, right? And everything else changed when I got there. And I walked into my public speaking class, mind you. First school that I went to, I took my first ever public speaking class at a time where I was very introverted and I was very scared to speak in public, because coming to America and going through these experiences growing up really made me more sheltered, right? Because I've got picked on for my accent as far back as fifth grade and those things that I've dealt with, right, in my own way. So I've always been very cautious in just what I said, what I did, and all of these things. And I'm always looking to try to fit in because I don't always fit in, and you name it. So those are always my own internal struggles, right? So I get to my four-year school that I transferred to, and now I think that I've now gotten so much better at this speaking thing. And I get signed up for a class, public speaking, that I looked at and I was like, I've mastered this now. Now I'm full of myself. I have confidence in my ability to speak more and you name it, because I've had so much more practice because of things that I didn't even ask for. I was just fortunate to be blessed with just getting positioned to be able to experience these types of things that really sped up my learning. I was held at a higher level of expectation, right? Just to be completely honest. So now I get to this school and I'm like, okay, one of the easiest classes I probably have to take now is this public speaking, because I'm a corporate communications minor. And I'm starting with this class because I'm thinking this should be my first easy A, is my mentality going in. And then I walked into the class. I noticed that it's a lady from Trinidad and Tobago. So I'm like, oh, that's my big sister now. She knows me from nowhere, right? And I go in there pretty much entitled at this point. And I do not work as hard as I needed to, because I came in with the same mentality, thinking that old mentality was going to work in a new environment. And let me just say, till this day, that's one of the only D's I've ever gotten in college.
Do you feel like you deserved that D?
I did. It woke me up. And I'm fortunate that it happened in my first semester ever, in my transfer semester. I'm fortunate for that, because it made me wake up.
And here you are, and I would not classify you as being introverted or reluctant to do public speaking. And I know you came in there with that like false bravado and this confidence that maybe was unearned. But what if you didn't have the confidence to take that class or to take that risk of standing up there and maybe looking stupid? Yeah. You know, like there's times like in our field, a lot of therapists talk about imposter syndrome where, you know, we have all this education and expertise and somebody's going to pay us to come and talk about something, or some family is going to pay us to give them advice about what they should do with their child. Like that's a huge responsibility. Right. And if you really get caught up in it, you can end up tripping over your own feet and not being able to help somebody. Like you have to have just like that touch of confidence that pushes you forward. And then every case you take, you learn from. But I can't help but turn it around and say, what if you didn't have the confidence to walk in there as potentially one of the only non-white students in the room and stand up there and feel like you deserve to be there?
And that's exactly what I felt like when I transferred and got there, right? I felt like I always had to work a lot harder than everybody else because I had to prove that I belonged there. And I not even that I belonged there, that I deserved to be there. I always worked to try to show people that I was deserving, right? As opposed to
white people who assume they're deserving most of the time. Let's be honest. White privilege is real.
Well, some say, yeah.
It is. But it is.
And here's the thing. Privilege comes in many different ways. That's the other piece of it. And I've had to face that personally because I'm privileged, and I can say this without a shadow of a doubt, to have experienced things that the average student never got to experience, which also gave me a level of responsibility personally taken on my own to also use that as a way to help other people, right? So that's kind of been my whole catch 22, if you want to call it that. Where it's like, okay, now that you're fortunate to get here and to have this level of access and whatever else, make sure you're now using that to help other people.
But that's still a responsibility that you might have that a white person doesn't feel. I don't want
to. That's funny to hear you say that.
I don't want to like use the wrong term, but you know, Trevor Noah, who hosts the Daily Show.
Trevor's funny.
Yeah. And I'm not sure I'm using it right. And I'm going to have to go back and look, but I think he calls it the black tax or something like that. And he talks about how if you're black and you reach success or you earn more than the average amount of money or whatever you want to call it, you are now tasked with looking back to the rest of your family or friends and doing what you can to bring them with you.
To Trevor's point, that's a very African thing to say. Because Trevor, number one, is South African.
Mm-hmm.
So coming from Trevor, I expect to hear that, actually. Because that's what we're expected to do. Because even though I'm here, I still have responsibilities back home in West Africa.
But that's not something I've ever been tasked with. You know, like, I mean, we are different in that way, you know, whether it's African versus American or white versus black, that's something that you have experienced that I don't. I mean, I have a responsibility to take care of my children, but, you know,
me too.
Right. But I mean, aside, which we all do, but like aside from that, like if I suddenly become wildly rich and famous from this podcast, my brothers aren't going to blink because there isn't going to be a need for me to look back and pull family members.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Well, the thing is, for us, it's also a choice thing, right? Because it's not like we have to do it. Because at the end of the day, no one truly has to do anything. Which is, once again, for me, it always comes back to one of the greatest gifts that we all get, and that's choice.
Yeah.
Right? We all get to choose things in life, including who you want to be in life. And that's part of the other thing in terms of my philosophy as a teacher. I try to help young people look at things from the perspective of stop stressing so much on what you want to do in life and what you want to do with your life versus who you want to be in life.
Focus on who you want to be, not what you want to do.
Focus more on preparing to become the person you ultimately want to be, that you're going to be completely happy looking at in the mirror, even when chaos is happening around you. Right. Not because not because things are perfect or you're perfect, but because you are at least okay with who you are, number one, because you're working all chances you get to improve being who you are in order to become who you want to be. Because here's my point, and Dr. Egan, please correct me if I'm wrong. We humans, especially let's say our society in America, we tend to work in many different spaces with many different people over the course of our working careers.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we want to specialize in any one area.
Oh, yeah. If you asked me 20 years ago if I would be doing what I do now, I would have said no. And I still use my degree and my training. I'm still in this helping profession, but it looks completely different now.
Right. But is it also fair to say that you have had to focus on you, the person, and your own personal development? Meaning, what is your mindset as it relates to many different things?
Oh, absolutely.
And you've had to consistently work on improving your mindset and even working towards attaining skill sets.
Yeah. Well, aside from like professional development where you enhance your clinical skills, there's also like, you know, like groups of colleagues. I've done business coaching and things like that where it focuses so much on, you know, separate from your clinical skills, like who you are as a person, your values, your mission, what your responsibilities are, what your ethics are, avoiding imposter syndrome, all of that, because it's really hard, I think, to be really good at something if you have all of these other things kind of weighing you down or holding you back. Like you have to tackle all of them.
Bingo. And that's the point. And that's why we have to help young people now start looking at things from that perspective, because it's more important than who you are and how consistent you are being who you are. Because regardless of whether you're thrown into the most chaotic of environment and thrown to the wolves and said, hey, look, go figure it out. This is what I'm expecting of you. Just get it done. And you now have to learn the environment all over again because it's completely new to you. Because you're going to have to do that as a young person all the way through being an adult. Right?
Yeah.
And it happens in the work world because who you are will remain consistent. And whichever environment you're thrown into, you will figure out, you will navigate the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're more self-aware. You understand things a little differently. You can be more empathetic when you're more self-aware.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? And you're working towards the manifestation of whatever self-actualization means for each of us, which is what we're ultimately striving for as human beings anyway.
I think it's super interesting to hear, like you and I consider similar in that we're both educators. You know, I used to be a school psychologist for a lot of years. I've been a professor, things like that. And your take is like a 3-degree shift. Like it's so closely aligned with mine, but given your experience and how you interact with youth now, like it's adjusted because of your experiences, but it's so aligned. And I know one of your passions is to work with youth and to make sure they're reaching their potential and they have a voice. Have you talked about that as far as like millennials and Gen Z?
Our world is so like, we grew up in a world of technology and a whole bunch of different social media, everything. And so our world looks a lot different than like
old people.
But how do you think that we interpret the world as millennials and Gen Zs compared to you guys?
Ooh, you know, it's funny. I'm one of the elder statesmen of the millennials, right?
I'm not.
So I still remember dial up before internet even popped onto your computer.
You don't even know what he's talking about.
No, she has no clue. But you do, Dr. Egan.
Oh, yeah, I do.
I still remember that. So I'm of the generation that still remembers dial-up, but then we were thrusted into what became the beginning phases of the digital revolution, right? So I get to see things a lot differently than, and then I guess my African influence growing up in two different countries really impacts that heavily because I've had to learn to assimilate in ways that I can't say it's unique to me personally because other people have to do it too. But I'm a learner. That's one of my strengths. I'm huge on a lot of the different assessments on self and from StrengthsFinder to Myers-Briggs and you name it. So I'm very self-aware, but then I've also taken a lot of these assessments that really helped me understand where a lot of my strengths lie. And I can see it play out, and I do see it play out in the things that I do consistently because this is me being true to who I am. I used to tell students when I worked at the college that I was going to leave one day and I was going to work in a different environment and I would excel in doing that because I knew the things that were necessary. I knew the formulas, right? And that's what I mean by helping young people, getting back to that, learn more about pursuing becoming who they want to be, right? Because me knowing who I am, it doesn't matter what I decide to do next. I'm applying the same things that I've been applying for these 15 plus 20, close to 20 years now that have allowed me to excel in the different environments that I've gotten into, but I've consistently been learning in each of these different environments.
So you have these like generalizable skills as far as how to interact with people.
Skills.
Mm-hmm. So having kids recognize that it's important to acquire those skills, be able to practice them in different settings with different kinds of people versus learning or focusing on a skill that is very specific to one domain and feeling like, oh yeah, I got what I need to be successful. When in reality, as we go through our lives, we are going to be in so many different areas and experiences where taking those skills, it's going to pave the way for us to be successful.
Correct. One of the more critical skills that you're very well aware of, because you do it so well yourself, communication, right? That's a loaded word.
Do you think you're a good communicator?
I mean, depends on what you mean. I mean, I do good communicating, I think, like with my teachers and with you. With my friends, sometimes I don't answer their texts right away or like stuff like that. But I think that I'm good at like...
Are you expressive?
It depends on the topic. I don't know.
But you're a kid. You got time to grow with that. I wasn't the communicator I am now when I was your age.
Yeah.
I did take a public speaking class in 10th grade with Miss Ham, and that is the most meaningful class I ever took in high school.
Oh, Miss Ham.
She was wonderful. And I took the class with my best friend, and like, who is still my best friend, and we talk about it. Like, it comes up multiple times a year.
And that's the one thing we'll use forever.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to forever speak in public.
Yeah. Well, and things like when you study, when you're in college and you learn how to present ideas in writing or verbally.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, that's all huge. Like all my dissertation, no one cares about it. I've never looked at it again. It's dusty. But what it did teach me is how to organize information and present it in a meaningful way. And like, that's the skill I got from it.
So you took the practicality, which is exactly what should be intended. And that's what should be communicated on the front end, in my opinion. You want to get young people excited about these subjects that we're sitting them in these classrooms and they're bored out of their minds and they're wondering, why am I even here? Tell them why they're in there.
Yeah.
Tell them how that's practical to the life that they're supposed to be living.
I feel like I try to do that with you guys when we do like homework and you'll be like, I don't understand why I have to do this. And I'm like, look at how it relates back to something I do.
Yeah. But
I didn't really get geometry proofs. I'm going to be honest. But there was also a part of it in which I was like, you know what? This is just going to be a lesson in determination. We are going to watch as many YouTube channels as it takes to persist with this task that feels pointless. And that in and of itself will be an accomplishment.
Well, I remember like not understanding why we had to learn history. I was like, this
oh my God, that's like the
sense.
Most important subject.
And then
subject.
You were like, it's going to repeat itself if you don't learn anything.
Exactly right.
That's I mean,
exactly
I was little.
Right.
But, like, or like we did something else. Maybe like learning stuff that we won't use in the future. And you're like, well, this is teaching you how to study. And this is how.
That's exactly
like,
right.
Maybe the teachers don't really care about the material, but they like care about how you perceive it.
Well, and I told
it.
You the other day that when you know literary references, you understand a lot more information in sitcoms.
Yeah.
Because they make a lot of jokes about, you know, the Scarlet Letter or, you know, something. And so there's times my husband just grew up in, he grew up in North Carolina, grew up in New York. And I'll be like, do you know what that reference is? And he's like, no. And I'm like, that's from whatever book. That's why that's funny. And I tell the
that's
kids,
awesome.
Like, just the fact that I know that, like, just makes my experience more rich.
Heightened experience, right? And that's the beauty of life. It's being able to learn as much as we can to make life a more heightened experience. We all want that. We go chasing for it in different ways and different shapes and different corners and you name it. But ultimately, we just want to really experience life for all that it has to offer.
If you're smart, you don't need drugs.
Right?
That it gives you a heightened experience, just like cocaine. I don't know. I've never done any drugs.
That's funny.
So how do we get young people to be able to advocate for themselves? I feel like it's hard for the younger generation to be able to be self-reflective, figure out what they need, express that need, also accept that not everybody's going to meet their need and be able to move forward. Like, how do you encourage your students to do that?
Well, first, Anna can speak to this and even share some stuff that I may not even see when this happens. But, and I'm going to ask you to please remember our first couple of days, well, we were all virtual, everybody. Let's think back to that, right?
Okay.
before we ever got it into the smaller groups and everything, I focused intentionally all of our efforts and energy on establishing what our classroom culture was going to be. And we didn't talk about the book once.
Oh, yeah.
The goal was to make sure that they knew that by the time we got to the book, all the book was going to help me do was show them theories that they'd already been experiencing in life.
Sometimes it's good to have a name for what it is that we're experiencing. Like on this podcast, we will pick a term, like a psychological term, and define it. And then we can give examples. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, I've done that. I know what that is. I just didn't know the name of it.
Correct. That's exactly right. So same thing. So we really spent the first 2 days, 90 minutes each, right? Everybody, we're talking 30 people, right? And we're all really just learning each other. And we're co-creating what this experience is getting ready to be. And some of the ways that I made sure they knew that I was very much fully invested in making sure that this became our space collectively was allowing them to even do the things, all of the assignments that I gave them those days. I had them not only read it out loud, so we all understood what was the expectation. For the ones that required them to answer certain questions, I had them interview me those questions. Do you remember me being interviewed?
Yeah.
She always gets so nervous when the teacher asks her questionnaire to share stuff about herself.
Okay, no, but he's helped me because we did a personality test and I talked about my personality and I was like one of the only people. I'm going to remember that for
Yeah, and she life. Made all of us take it too.
Yeah, did. I did.
Yeah, all the family, we all took it separately and we all ended up different.
Yeah.
Right. But things like that, right? Because now, even if it's not 100% absolutely correct, which 9 times out of 10 is not, but at least it gives you some level of insight.
Yeah. There was definitely things about that that spoke to you that you recognized as being true for you. Because I think your personality said something like you're a big nerd and you were like, yeah,
yep.
It was okay. Whatever the, well, the category was that
it
that
was your big career one, because I was like freaking out. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can see myself in so many different things. I'm never going to figure out what my passion is. And then the career thing was like, these people with this personality usually have a hard time picturing themselves in one specific thing because they see themselves in so many different things. And I was like,
you have it.
And I always tell her like, oh, poor you. You're so talented in so many things that your oh choices God. Aren't super narrow and you're just resorting to one thing. Oh.
Here's the funny thing though, right there, at least now you're aware.
True.
And it's not just you either.
Yes, that is true. Because you always feel like you're the only one who has these identity crises.
Well, no, I don't think I'm the only one. I just think that a lot more people know what they want to do. And I'm just like left behind with the rest.
Nobody knows.
A lot of times that's just in your head, Anna.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
Right?
Because I had no idea what I was going to do at your age. None.
Well, apparently.
Most people don't.
Yeah, that's a normal thing. Not to get all like sciencey about it, but like if you're talking about human development or whatever, and you talk about identity, development of identity, there's like a couple different categories. And I don't want to go all into it, but one of the things is people who jump into a certain profession and they don't explore. And so your stepdad is like this. He was raised in a family that had restaurants. And so to him, he's never done anything else. I mean, I don't even think he's ever had like an after school job that was not in a restaurant. So he was very definitive about what he went into, but he did almost no exploring. And then you look at your stepbrother, your oldest stepbrother, who loves to try different things. He's had his hand in all sorts of different careers. It's all innovative. It's all hardworking. But every time you turn around, he's got like a new idea. So, and he's young, he's in his mid-20s. Like he doesn't need to decide. He doesn't have a family or some huge responsibility. But so for him, he's in this exploring stage and he has not settled down into anything. You know what I mean? So like, you're supposed to go through this process
I just wish, like, it would be easier if I knew what would happen at
the end. It'd be boring if you knew.
Well, here's the funny thing, Anna. That right there is what's going to keep you in trouble.
Oh, no.
because that's what keeps a lot of us from really just getting out there and living life. Because we always want to control what's on the other side. We always want to know what's on the other side before we even make a move. But in life, no one knows what's on the other side. You just got to trust that you're in the right direction.
Yeah, you got to trust.
How do you know you're in the right direction?
Like, I have a sense of competence. Regardless of what happens, like, I've got this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I do. I've got this. It might look different. You know, I could have to go down a completely different path. But I have an innate belief and confidence that I can do things.
That's it.
And so you are not quite there yet. So once you get to that place where you're like, all right, something might happen that I can't predict, but you know what? I'm going to be fine. That's very freeing.
That's it.
And I didn't get that feeling until your dad and I were divorced and I had to go and do things.
Mm.
And so maybe you'll learn even earlier than me.
Are you telling me I should get divorced?
You should so no. get divorced. It's so fun. It's terrible. Don't do that.
I'm so glad
that's the lesson you took from that conversation.
No,
I feel like Mr. Shianko and I are teaming up to send you a message of confidence and hope.
Look, that's what we're going to work on, Anna.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have every reason to be confident in yourself.
Absolutely.
I've known that about you since day one.
I agree. Me too. Me too.
Thanks, Mom.
So tell us a little bit about your book. Okay. It's called Leadership is a Choice. And it's by the time this episode comes out, it's totally going to be on sale and people can access it. So what do you want us to know about the book?
So as I've even shared a little bit about my thoughts on leadership, I've gotten to the point where, well, number one, the book is a compilation of my obsession with the topic leadership. I won an award for outstanding leadership as student government president my last year at the community college that I attended. I was there for 2 years. My second year became student government president and was fortunate to experience a lot of things that really positioned me in a very unique way. And at the end of that year of being student government president, the Board of Trustees gave me the award for outstanding leadership. And it's a plaque that I still have to this day. But when I received that, I kept looking at this plaque, wondering and asking myself, what is it about me that makes them think I'm a leader that deserve anything like this? This is an honest, personal, internal monologue, right?
You had imposter syndrome for a minute there.
Right. And I said to myself, what does this word really mean? What does it mean to be a leader? What is leadership? And I really went down this rabbit hole of pursuing and learning and studying from people, from, I'm talking YouTube clips of the Tony Robbins, the Jim Rohns, the Les Browns, and you name it. Even people like T.D. Jakes, because I love orators, right? I love people who really know how to communicate well. I love studying from people who know how to take information, break it up, and feed it back in a way that makes you want to consume it. And I've obsessively gone after people, and I've even looked people up. I've called them, I've emailed them, and I've asked for 10 to 15 minutes. That's turned into an hour of me just literally asking questions. Some of them now I call mentors. And I've just always been that bold to go after what I want to learn.
It's empowering. It's empowering when you feel like you have a sense of control over what you know and understand.
Well, there you go. Because to me, that's what now allows me to be able to confidently say that I truly believe that leadership is a choice that anyone can make at any moment. And when you make that decision, not only do you become empowered, but you now have the opportunity and the ability and responsibility to empower other people.
Do you ever think of running for office?
I've been asked that before, but I really don't like politics personally.
Yeah. Well, that would be a problem.
But and 10 years from now, you might feel differently.
Maybe. I never
Some of these guys are super old when they run. Like, you got tons of time. Tons of time. You're so young.
I never say never. Let me just say that.
That's true.
I never say never.
You should consider it.
We'll see.
That's a good response. You don't want to be closed-minded to it.
I can't
keep your options open.
Life is too funny for me to be closed-minded on anything at this point.
Yeah.
Where I'm at. So, you know, I will never say never to anything anymore. It's bitten me a few times already.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
those things come back around when you least expect it.
For you to even say that, though, thank you, because obviously you hear something, see something, mm-hmm. sense something that I'm not. So thank you.
I have some years on you. So as a elder wise person, you can just take that as just a little nugget. You can just file away as a possibility. Doesn't need to be today. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I'm going to store it.
Yeah. Right, and right someday, if you become a famous politician and I'm like, hey, can we come and be in the audience? And you'll be like, yeah, yeah, Tara Egan, you are the start of the whole thing. And then I'll just take credit for your career.
Yeah.
Like a lot of white people do.
I love it.
It'll be a full circle.
I love it.
And we have it on tape.
So I know.
This is so dope right now.
Well, I have to say I so appreciate your time,
yes.
your willingness to have a long day at school and then hop on.
With your student.
Zoom with your student.
It's always for my students.
You're going to see her again in less than like 12 hours.
I look forward to it already.
Well, I just want to remind our listeners that Armo Shianko, his book is called Leadership is a Choice, and he is a teacher at Anna's school and has greatly inspired her. And he's so kindly offered like over an hour of his time just to chat with us so we can hear about his philosophy of teaching, his experiences that have brought him here. And it's just another wise adult in my child's life who can influence her in a positive way. And for that, I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for this. This is one of the best experiences yet.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm going to let you know when this is ready to be posted and you know, you're going to have to keep it on the down low as far as Anna. Maybe by then, maybe you'll be ready to stand on the stage at your school and say,
hey, I do a podcast with my mom.
With my mom.
Oh, yeah. So no.
Let's get this right, Anna. This is I run a podcast with my mommy. Ooh.
That's true. I let her be part of it.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm the host. I'm there Dr. Anna Egan.
There you have it. This is so much fun.
I'm so glad you think so. Yeah. I'm so glad.
This is so much fun.
Well, just to remind our listeners, we have new episodes every single Wednesday. Please feel free to leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts. And right now, I think we're about halfway through season 3, if I'm estimating when we're releasing this episode.
Boom.
I know. Nice. That means we've probably got about 55 episodes under our belt.
Whoa.
I know. Wow. Think of all we've learned and all the cool people we've met.
I've learned so much.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, yes. Mr. Shianko, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. This was great. This really just made my Monday.